even though we want freedom, like all the garbage food and the way it's advertised to us, and just getting people to exercise more. How would you solve that?
Well, you know, that's not easy, obviously, even though it seems to make common sense. On one hand, you can tax sugar, you know, but that's going to upset a lot of people. There's no good reason for added sugar. None. All it did, it's only there to try to get people to consume products that are going to make your health worse. Nothing about sugar makes your health better. Period. End of story.
I was shocked when I had children. My oldest now is a teenager, but when they were young, I tried my best, you know, to keep them away from sugar. And I got to tell you, we went into a bank teller. This is when people used to go into bank tellers, and they gave us lollipops. The dentist's office gave us stuff. People at a ski resort that I didn't even know handed my kids cookies. Like, it's just everywhere.
Everywhere.
Welcome to the Spartan Up podcast with Joe DeSena, founder and CEO of Spartan Race.
We are talking about overcoming obstacles. The same way we teach people to get over obstacles on the course, we will teach you here on the Spartan Up podcast to get over obstacles in your mind.
We're excited to welcome billionaire Mark Cuban to Spartan Up today. The Shark Tank star and owner of the Dallas Mavericks talks to Joe about how he would solve some of the most pressing problems we face today. Keeping America fit, childhood obesity, what he thinks of mandatory service, and even how he would market Spartan races.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Athletic Brewing Company, pioneering a revolution in craft, non-alcoholic beers. Place your order today at athleticbrewing.com and get free shipping on 2 6-packs or more.
Joe DeSena here, founder and CEO of Spartan. I am here on the Spartan Up podcast, and today is like a big day. This is bigger than COVID being over. We got Mark Cuban on the podcast. I don't know how this happened, but he's willing to talk to me. I can't get my wife to talk to me, but Mark Cuban wants to talk.
So, hey, I can't get my wife to talk to me, so I get that.
What's it like being a billionaire?
It's amazing. There's no downside.
Seriously, like, you read a lot of stuff. If you dive into it, I happen to know a few billionaires, none like you, that also has all this fame. But typically they're not happy. At least that's what you read.
Oh, I mean, then they're crazy. I mean, look, I've been poor, and I was happy when I was poor, but I was a lot happier when I was rich. You know, it's just, I've had my lights turned off. I've had my credit cards cut up. I've been turned down for stuff because of credit. I've lost girlfriends because I was broke. I had multiple roommates, you know, where we had to kind of like scam to pay the rent. And I had fun, but this is a whole lot better, you know? And so I just try to not take it for granted and enjoy it.
I guess what you're saying, as I listen to you, if you're happy anyway in life, which everybody should be because we're alive, you're happier with money. If you're unhappy in life, might not help.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, there's money, or the need for money creates stress. You know, paying the bills, getting things done. You know, we all have, particularly, you know, as we're younger, we all have a lot of dreams and goals. And if you have money, a lot of that stress goes away so you can focus on those dreams and goals. You know, not having to worry about paying the bills. You know, I mean, it used to be I could tell you exactly how much I had in my checking account. I could tell you how much, you know, if I wrote a check for this amount, it was going to bounce. You know, I don't have to worry about that stuff anymore. And that's a big stress that's gone. And I'm glad it's gone. You know, I wouldn't want to be living that way again.
What have you achieved everything? Like, do you wake up? Are you complacent? Do you wake up and you're like, man, I got to get after this? Or I like, is there something still driving you every day?
No, I'm competitive as hell, right? So for me, business is a sport, you know? So I want to, you know, when I was young and starting my companies and doing things, I was always the youngest, and I always liked being the youngest. Now I'm the oldest, and, you know, and so I like to compete with people that are, you know, half my age or younger, and I want to kick their ass. And so that competitive drive is what really pushes me.
You wake up every day, you just want to win.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I want to show people that I can still do it. And, you know, because you know how kids are, right? They're like, well, you know, you don't understand, right? Or you don't get this, or you can't do this, or, you know, whatever. And And I just like to prove people wrong.
What would you tell that young person? Like if you weren't competing with them and didn't want to step on their neck and beat them, what would you tell them if they want to be Mark Cuban, they want to make some money, they want to be a billionaire? Like what three things do they have to do?
I mean, first, no one should try to be a billionaire, right? It's not, you know, you got to be lucky to make that level of money, right? I mean, you want to be comfortable, you want to achieve your goals, and that starts with, you know, finding something that you're really good at and trying to be great at it. You know, that's where it starts, because we, you know, when you're younger, particularly, you know, you don't know exactly what you want to be when you grow up, or you've got a bunch of different things, but you don't really know what you're going to be good at. And so trying a bunch of things, finding something that you like to do and then trying to be great at it is probably the most important. Now, if that leads to a lot of money, that's, you know, that's a positive potentially. And then from there, you know, in order to be really wealthy, you pretty much have to start your own business. You know, you've got to be able to go out there and take what you're good at and turn it into a business. And then three, be ready to always be learning. And four, always be selling, you know, because there's no business that survives without sales. There's no business that survives without the ability to be agile and change, because you're always learning. And there's no business that's really great if you don't love what you're doing.
You know that famous scene with Alec Baldwin in Glengarry Glen Ross, where he says, always be closing. And he's
always be closing. Always be closing. A, always B, B, C, B, closing. You know, Cadillac is for closing. What is it?
First place, Cadillac. Second place is steak knives. Third place, you're fired.
Fired, yeah. I mean, I watched that movie 20 times.
So I told my team and my kids, like, you're always selling, right? Even in life. And so would you say that's the number one skill people have to develop, that personality to be convincing?
No, I don't think it's convincing. I think it's helping, right? I think selling has evolved from trying to sell ice to Eskimos type thing to really, you know, letting people know that when you go to a Spartan race, right, it's not, you know, I don't have to convince you. I'm going to help you. If you go, this is going to make you better, right? This is how you're going to benefit. And that's what I try to do with all my companies. How can I help somebody? Because if I can understand what your goals are and what your needs are, and I can help you get there, that's not convincing. That's just helping. And if you love your product enough that you know how to help people with it, then you're going to be successful.
That makes sense. My kids and I and my friends 2 days ago were watching Shark Tank. We were at a wrestling
tournament. Shark Tank Friday night on ABCs at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central.
I don't know.
That's what always be selling, right?
Yeah, there you go. I was in Myrtle Beach at a wrestling tournament with the world shut down. We got to find the states and the cities that allow us to go to wrestling tournaments. And we were down there and we had 2 hours before the flight, and I flipped through literally 90 channels and didn't find anything, including basketball games, whatever. And then Shark Tank was on. So we all stopped on Shark Tank, and it was the one, I don't know if you remember, Tor, T-O-O-R. There was a gentleman that had a lockbox on a door for people looking for real estate.
Oh, yeah, the Dallas kid, yeah.
And you got in a fight with your teammates there.
Oh, yeah, with Chris Sacca about whether it was digital or analog, yeah.
Yeah, and so I'd love to know how that played out, because we had to catch our flight, and we didn't.
Yeah, he didn't get a deal, but he's from Dallas, so I've kept in touch with him. I don't know how well the company's doing, because I kept in touch with him for a little while after that aired, which was probably 5-6 years ago. No, probably 4 years ago. And yeah, so I don't know what's happened to the company. But yeah, me and Sacca, like I said, I'm competitive. So if you challenge me, I'm going to go right back at you. I'm never going to back down.
Yeah, you were going right at him. And to your point about ABCs, right, always be closing, that Dallas fellow, that guy that made the pitch, he was smooth.
Yeah, he was. He was good. That was his, you know, that was his special skill, right? He was smooth. He could close. He could sell. He understood the value proposition. I just don't know whether, you know, enough people were willing to give him money for that value proposition, and that was the challenge.
Could I bring up, I did a survey. We sent sure. We got about 600,000 responses, and these aren't necessarily in order, but I'd love to know how you tackle these
sure.
big problems, right? So number one, obviously, was COVID. I want to get back out of the house. Everybody was chanting. How would you solve that?
So first and foremost, it should have been done at the, it should have been organized at the federal level at, by the U.S. government, rather than just leaving it to states. Because, you know, like any business, you want to learn from your experiences. You don't want to have 50 different people or 50 different states in this case having to, you know, relearn everything and try to figure things out as they go. When you have every, you know, it should have been centralized. And it's the same with the vaccine. There should have been a centralized way for all of us to sign up. It should, there should be a centralized database so everybody knows, you know, what batch number for the vaccine you got, and, you know, getting you automatically scheduled for the next one. And then you can ship the vaccines to where people need them, you know. And so the, it's no different than any other business problem other than the scale, obviously, with hundreds of millions of people needing vaccines. It's almost like taking a critical product that your company makes, sending them out to all the regional offices and saying, just tell us how it goes. You know, no one would ever do that. And that's unfortunate that that's the way it's been happening.
It, what's your gut say? When do you think we'll be back outside at basketball games and doing normal?
I think by April, we'll be able to have people in stands like normal, you know. And I think because enough people, the people who are vaccinated won't care, you know, if the others aren't. But, you know, if you've got 20,000 people that are Mavs fans that are willing to come to a game, then at that point, I'm willing to let them, as opposed to now, where I'm, even though legally I'm allowed to have fans, I'm not letting them in because there's too many people who don't care if they get it or if they spread it. And it's the people who don't care if they spread it that I'm worried about.
Sure, sure. All right, so that was the first one. How do we get people back outside? Second one was, how do we get the country to get over this blue-red divide? Like, how do we bring people back together?
Yeah, there's a couple things there. One, how we elect people. You know, we've got two, it's a duopoly. We've got the Republicans and the Democrats, right? And they all, you know, you can create 20 different parties, but no matter what party you can create, they're all going to have their own power dynamic and try to gain as much power as possible. That's just the nature of politics. And so I'm a big fan of ranked choice voting, which effectively says, well, let me take a step back. Right now, with the duopoly, the Republicans and the Democrats, they each have their own primary. And the primary, let's just say, for the presidential election, you don't get nearly as many voters, right? We had 150 million voters for the regular election. We had a fraction of that for the Democratic primary back, you know, 2016 for the Republican primary. And because there's so few primary voters, and it gets smaller and smaller as you go down the tiers, the local votes to local elections, because you get so few, those voters tend to be the most extreme, right? And so because they're the most extreme, the politicians have to pander to the most extreme of the voters, the primary voters. And so ranked choice vote changes that so that it's not about, when it gets down to having the actual election, you can have multiple candidates. That reduces a lot of the need for politicians to pander to the most extreme voices during primaries. And I think that's a, goes a long way towards changing it.
All right, the next big item, and they want America to get healthy. Not surprising, because the 600,000 plus people that responded are Spartans, right? So they think this way.
Right.
But they're upset with even though we want freedom, like all the garbage food and the way it's advertised to us, and just getting people to exercise more. How would you solve that?
Well, you know, that's not easy, obviously, even though it seems to make common sense. On one hand, you can tax sugar, you know, but that's going to upset a lot of people. On the other hand, the optimal way to be is, okay, if you want a credit on all the sugar taxes, that's fine. Well, if you don't want to pay the sugar taxes, but you have to opt out of any type of support services, right? So in other words, you can't eat sugar all day long and get type 2 diabetes that you brought on yourself and then go to the hospital and have taxpayers pay for it. You pay for it one way or the other, right? But if it's your choice not to participate and you're willing to take all the responsibility, more power to you, right? If you say, I don't believe in sugar taxes, I don't think it's right, we shouldn't tax sugars, great. You shouldn't have to pay those taxes, but then you have to take the responsibility of the health consequences, and you can't just, you know, say, okay, you know, I want public service to take care of my type 2 diabetes. You can't have it both ways. there's no chance that ever passes, but that's, you know, that's the way I would do it, where people can opt in or opt out. But if that, you know, given that there's no chance of that, the second best thing in my mind is taxing sugar, because there's no good reason for added sugar. None. All it did, it's only there to try to get people to consume products that are going to make your health worse. Nothing about sugar makes your health better. Period. End of story.
Yeah.
Other than natural sugar, added sugar. Right.
I was shocked when I had children. My oldest now is a teenager, but when they were young, I tried my best, you know, to keep them away from sugar. And I got to tell you, we went into a bank teller. This is when people used to go into bank tellers. And they gave us lollipops. The dentist's office gave us stuff. People at a ski resort that I didn't even know handed my kids cookies. Like, it's just everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah. I mean, look, you know, diet and exercise are everything, right? And so, you know, people will exercise as they exercise. And people are exercising more. They're recognizing it more. But you're right. Sugar is the ultimate killer. Period. End of story. You know, and my kids are 11, 14, and 17, and they literally would leave home if I didn't let them have some of their snacks and stuff like that. And so, you know, and, you know, there's two parts to that question as well. How your body deals with the intrusion of sugar and bad things when you're 18, you know, or even 25 or 30 is completely different versus as you get older, right? And so I think we can live with kids consuming some of the junk as long as they can keep their weight down. Right, because their bodies can still, for the most part, deal with it unless you get to obesity levels. But as people get older, you know, particularly in your 50s, 60s, 70s or older, and you're still consuming sugar and other things, you know, that are bad for your body can't deal with those intrusions, right? And so, you know, I'm not the scientist to say it absolutely causes A, B, and C, but I'm smart enough to know none of those things are good for you. Right. And so if there's a way literally that we could reduce sugar consumption for older Americans, I think that reduces our cost of healthcare significantly.
And going right from there, believe it or not, one of the things they brought up was this childhood obesity issue. How do you solve that? I saw some images from when JFK had put together that presidential fitness program, right. From, you know, what the kids looked like back then. Now, maybe the video footage we see is only the kids that were participating heavily.
Hey, I was a little kid back then, and I was a chubby little kid. So, you know, even though I participated in sports, my brothers and I, we were the chubby kids. And it took me some while to get rid of it. But I get your point, right? We need to have more activity for kids in school, and we're going away from that. And particularly coming out of COVID, right, when kids were locked down and it was tougher. So, you know, you can't mandate it, but you certainly can market it. And I think that's a big part of it as well. I would market fitness. You know, that's how we learn things. That's how we pick our presidential candidates, by how we're marketed to. Well, if we can convince people on who to vote for president by buying ads, we certainly can do the same thing to try to encourage people to exercise and get fit at all ages.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, if you can convince a kid, I guess, to eat Fruit Loop cereal, you should be able to convince him to work out.
Well, exactly. Or not eat Fruit Loops, or eat, you know, that this tastes just as good as that. You know, if you go to markcuban.com, I've got a lot of healthy products that I invest in, you know, that are meant, because I'm a nosher, right? I like to eat junk food, but then once I get into a habit, I'm good with it. So I've got a company, Alyssa's Healthy Cookies, that's all we do, right? I've invested in this company because I eat these cookies every single morning for breakfast. They're high in fiber, low net carbs, no added sugar, and they taste amazing. There's a vegan version for vegetarians and vegans. There's a variety of different flavors. There's another company I just invested in. I'm going to screw up the name. It's Natua Snacks, and there's these wafers, and there's only one calorie per wafer. And I'm getting them to redo all the branding or everything, because I'm a nosher, right? If you're like me, sometimes you just like to eat and eat and eat. And it's not so much volume, it's just how much time you're consuming, right? And I can eat 50 of these things, and it doesn't really fill you up, but you're just eating, and it's only 50 calories. And there's no added sugar, none of that kind of stuff. And so, you know, all these types of products, I think, are going to get put together. I'm working on a company that we're setting up a website, and we haven't finalized the URL yet, but it's for people who have acid reflux and GERD, right? Because at some point in your life, as you get older, it's going to happen to you, right? And there's a lot of foods that are acid reflux positive, and a lot of foods that make it worse. And people don't understand that. And we actually literally just created a little label, just like GF became gluten-free, you know, so there'll be like a little AR to say that this is acid reflux friendly. You know, there are a lot of opportunities from a business perspective because people need to be better educated and it needs to be more convenient. You know, there's ways to make it easier and there'll be more and more products to make it better. We just got to go out there and market those and have people realize that there are good tasting alternatives to Fruit Loops and the junk.
All your products, by the way, that are health driven or purposeful, like Cressa's got Shower Toga. You've got the Alyssa's cookies. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Alyssa's cookies. Yep. So, I would like to all your companies that are purposeful and health conscious. They could come to Spartan and Tough Mudder for nothing, no charge.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
It's on me because I just want to get people healthy. That's the goal.
I'm the same way. I'm the exact same way, right? You know, there's a lot of things the government can do to help, and there's a lot of things free enterprise can do to help as well. And my preference is always to use free enterprise if there's any option whatsoever. But it's, you know, sometimes you need a little bit of help from both sides. But yeah, these companies, Alyssa's is just killing it. I mean, and just a quick story, Doug Sriracha, the guy who started it, sent me a cookie, just unsolicited, just this huge cookie. And the first thing I always do is look in the back at the nutritional information. And I'm like, wow, you know, high in fiber, da 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 da. I'm like, it must taste awful, right? So I taste it, incredible. I'm like, what's wrong with this, right? And so then I go to pull the cookie out of the wrapper and it just all fell apart. You can't have a cookie that you can't bite as a cookie. So I made them change it into little oatmeal bites. So the little tiny bites instead of a big cookie, changed everything. We did one promotion at one in Dallas at Central Market, a local grocery store. And it's been picked up around the country, around the world ever since. And now these guys, from literally selling out of his car in 2012, he's now doing 20 million plus in sales and growing.
Wow. Yeah, we got to get him, connect him with me, if you don't mind. Get me some cookies.
I will for sure.
That'd be great. So the other thing that came up in this survey was, you know, Joe, in Israel, they've got like mandatory military service or whatever. Lots of cultures used to have rites of passage. What if the United States did something after high school where kids had to do a year?
We're going to jump right back to that interview in just a minute, but I want to talk to you about Athletic Brewing. They're the sponsor of today's episode. We met their founder, Bill Schufelt, at a Spartan race. He was a super authentic guy, and he told us why he started Athletic Brewing. He started it for people who love craft beers but don't want the alcohol. He uses high-quality, all-natural, all-organic ingredients to create brews for everyone. They have a Run Wild IPA, an Upside Down Golden Ale, a Freeway Double Hop IPA, and they're all without alcohol, but they taste like the best craft beers. Beer's been used through the ages as a great replenishment option after exertion. Now you can enjoy an award-winning craft beer taste anytime without worrying about the alcohol. Keep a clear head, drink healthy when you want a beer with friends or family or to refuel after a race. You shouldn't have to sacrifice your ability to be healthy, active, and at your best to enjoy a great beer. In fact, we at Spartan believe in them so much, they're available as a finisher beer at U.S. races. Athletic Brewing is a company pioneering a revolution in craft, non-alcoholic beers. Place your order today at athleticbrewing.com. And don't forget, you get free shipping on 2 6-packs or more.
In Israel, they've got like mandatory military service or whatever. Lots of cultures used to have rites of passage. What if the United States did something after high school where kids had to do a year of
service? Yeah. I'm not against that, right? I mean, the Peace Corps has kind of gotten swallowed up and not really as big as it used to be. There's a group called AmeriCorps. I don't know that I would make it mandatory, but I would make it much bigger. So, for instance, the group AmeriCorps, what they are just going out and doing service projects, right? But you get paid for it. You don't get paid much, but I would increase the pay for. But I would make it so that anybody coming out of college who doesn't have a job could get a job. Right. So that it effectively be a guaranteed job program for service for the country, so that it'd be available to everybody and anybody once they graduated from high school or college. And you'd have a 2 or 3 year window to take advantage of it. And I think you'd effectively accomplish the same thing. So if somebody, you know, couldn't find the job they wanted, still needed to make some money, you know, wanted to do something good for the country, it'd be there waiting for them, as opposed to requiring that they participate. Because if someone's going to go out and create the next great thing, you don't want to stop that. But if somebody really wants to do something for the country, they'll have that option and they'll be able to make a living wage from it.
I like that because you're right. If somebody's got something big they're already lined up, they might not need that year off. But I would imagine the bulk of people don't have something lined up.
Right. And so get them a job, right, where they can do something. It may be walking kids across the street. It may be reading to kids in an underprivileged school, right? It may be doing counseling, whatever it may be, you know, who knows? But at the same time, there's lots of ways we all can contribute. And if you give those kids a job, you know, they'll pay their bills and that'll reduce the stress, give them health care as part of it. And, you know, they're in a much better place. They'll get great experience. You know, I always tell kids, you know, you don't need the perfect job when you graduate. You know, you don't. But you just spent 4 years probably paying to learn. Right. Paying somebody to teach you, go get a job and you'll get paid to learn. Right. You want to flip that. And you know, doing something via AmeriCourse is a way to, you know, get kids so they're getting paid to learn. And that's a big step forward.
I like that. What about and at the end, I guess I'll ask you about Tesla stock, which is just unbelievable. But you touched on it a little bit with AmeriCorps, but how do we fix does the education system even need to be fixed?
Yeah, it does need to be fixed, but it's a function more of poverty than it is the education system itself, because you can have the best schools and the best teachers and just brand new buildings and everything. But if kids aren't getting breakfast, you know, and there's nobody there to, you know, encourage them to do their homework and support them. So, you know, this is where you start talking about how do you reduce income inequality, right? And again, you know, a lot of that has to do with jobs programs and getting people so they can earn a living wage. I'm not a fan of universal basic income. I am a fan of caretaker basic income, meaning if you're a parent that stays home with your child, I'm okay paying you because it's going to save the country money in the long run. If you can afford and get health care for your kid or kids or whatever it is, and you're there to make them so that they're getting through preschool and kindergarten and doing well, great. You know, that's a positive for the country. That's an investment for the country as opposed to an expense. And from there, you know, it really, there's a 10 hour conversation, right? On how do you deal with income inequality? But, you know, it kind of trends into stocks. The only way to reduce income inequality in the big picture is people need appreciable assets. You know, if you're only getting paid by the hour, just salary, and, you know, even if you're just saving money, that's good, right? But if you don't have anything, whether it's a house or stocks or whatever, Bitcoin for that matter, if you don't have anything that can appreciate, then you're always going to be falling behind. And so creating a scenario where we encourage companies to offer stock to all employees. Like I've always offered stock to my employees. And anytime I've sold a company, they've also gotten heavily rewarded as a result. And so I think encouraging companies to do that through tax policy would go a long ways towards helping to reduce income inequality.
I like that. All right. What does a typical day look like for you from, you know, health and wellness standpoint, from a work standpoint? Like, what time do you get up? What do you do? How do you tackle?
Yeah, I'm up typically about 7 or so, give or take. Just depends on the kids, right? If I got to get up earlier or if I work late. From there, it's check my email, you know, while I'm laying in bed to make sure there's no emergencies that I missed while I was asleep. Because I don't put my phone, so I wake up to every email or text during the night. And so I deal with those and then get up, shower, et cetera. Kids go to school. They're old enough now. They kind of take care of that themselves. Come sit in front of my computer, like here in my office, and just, you know, because I don't do a lot of calls like this. I don't do a lot of meetings, even in normal times. And so almost everything is through email. So I'll get 1,000 emails a day. So most of the day I'm cranking through them. Sometimes I have a little treadmill. So sometimes I'll be on the treadmill while I'm doing that, because I don't want to just sit here all day. And then at some point I'll go on and I'll get on my Peloton or a treadmill or a lift or my elliptical, just to get something during the day. And then at night while I'm watching basketball, I'm on my elliptical or bike watching basketball. So I've got my Apple Watch, it's charging right now, but I got to get my 1,000 move points, you know? And, you know, and the other thing I do is I write everything into MyFitnessPal. So if you download MyFitnessPal, you can add me at Mark Cuban, and you can see everything I eat. Now, it's not 100% accurate because there's not always a match for the things I eat, but I track my calories. I track my nutrition. So I try to get the RDA because I'm a restless legs guy, so I don't get enough magnesium. And I try to do things without taking supplements. So I get it all naturally through food because I think our body processes that better. Then I also record my workout. So if you want to see, you know, and I think I've recorded every day. I've got like a 5-year streak, 1,800 straight days, right, where I've recorded my information. And obviously it's not perfect, but I'm hanging in there, you know, and I feel pretty good.
That's awesome. Tracking, I hear that from Olympians. I hear that from high performers, that tracking everything really makes a difference.
But you know, when you're eating something, you're going to have to write it down, right? And so that it doesn't always stop me, you know, particularly around Christmas time. I still have my pig out moments, but it sure slows me down knowing that I have to write it down.
Yeah, you're held accountable when you got to write
it down. Yeah, exactly right.
It's written in stone. I guess the last thing, and then we'll have some fun with Chris, is Tesla stock. I mean, no particular reason. I'm just asking because you're obviously talented in the financial markets. But does it seem insane to you? Elon Musk, amazing, obviously. But
yeah, I'm a big Elon Musk fan. Does it seem crazy to me? Relatively speaking, no. Right. So the question is: are all assets right now, you know, all appreciable assets, are they crazy right now? Compared to 5 years ago, yes. But when interest rates are near zero, no. Right? Because, you know, people have choices on where they put their money. You work your ass off, you save some money, where are you going to put it? Well, you're not going to just keep it in your bank account. And by the way, I think everybody should save at least 9 to 12 months of cash, even though it's earning nothing in your bank account, just for that rainy day, because you don't know what's going to happen. We've seen that, you know, with the pandemic. But above that, you know, where else are you going to put it? You know, if there were 5% interest rates like there were, you know, 15 years ago, the stock market and Tesla, et cetera, would not be anywhere near where it is, because people would have safer places to put their money, and earning 5% in a 2% inflation world is easy money, right? Your ability, your savings quality grows over time. But now that's why you see all these assets, trading cards, right? Your Mickey Mantle baseball card, your stamp collection, your coin collection, your art collection, your car collection, right? Your cryptocurrency, your stocks, they're all just skyrocketing because people have got to put their money someplace. And on top of that, you can borrow money really cheap. So if the stock market goes up an average of 7% a year, and some stocks like Tesla, like I've owned Netflix since it was 50, I've owned, you know, Amazon since it was under 500, and, you know, they just skyrocketed and I haven't sold them. But if I were, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, look how much they're going up. I can borrow money at 1% or 2% if I put my house up, and if I can earn 10%, why wouldn't I do that? That which is smart until it's not, right? Everybody's a genius in a bull market. When stocks and assets are going up in price, of course I'm smart. Look, I bought Tesla and Tesla's, you know, quadrupled. I bought it at 80 and now it's 800 and da 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 da. That works until it doesn't. I was around during the internet stock bubble and, you know, ran a public company, broadcast.com, where the price would go up or down $150 in a day, right? In a day, it was crazy. And it worked until the whole bubble crashed. Now, fortunately, I had hedged, so I was protected, but not everybody did. So moral of the story is, learn, you know, if you've got a ton of gains and you don't want to sell them for tax reasons or whatever, or you still think it might go up, learn how to hedge to protect yourself against the downside, buy puts or whatever, short, however you think you want to do it, because nothing goes up forever.
All right. last thing is you said we need to market healthy. Obviously, it's an uphill battle. It's not like marketing sugar. It's not like marketing video games. But the good news is Spartan feels a little bit like a real life video game.
Yep.
So how would you market that? I mean, I it's tough convincing people to crawl under barbed wire.
And that's what I would, that I would do a couple of different ones, right? So I would gradate it, right? So there's the badass, right? The people who want to show that they're badasses, and then you have different levels. I know that you do, right? But then I would do some stuff that's really simple. Right. I would do something that encourages people that where they can have fun. And it's an obstacle course with the obstacles not being much. Right. And you don't want to have it on the same day where all the guys and women who are jacked up that are coming in that just, you know, do this stuff. You know, they're CrossFitters and they're just looking for something different to do. You want to have it, you know, on an empty day where you encourage people to come out and you make it the easiest of easy. So that you give them just that confidence to take that next step. And I would work for those type of people. I would work through trainers, right? And you know, keep making a little bit lower price. Your obstacles are going to be a lot less expensive. You don't have all, you know, the management and issues, and just keep it really, really simple and work through that. But I really think your biggest asset is that 600,000 person email list. And monetizing that is your biggest upside, right? So rather than using the mailing list to promote people to come back to do more of the Spartan races, right? Use that as a platform because you know the demographic is all into health, right? So selling ads to Alyssa's Cookies or whoever, right? Coming up and adding content to that. So will you have where you have Spartan members who are experts in A, B, or C talking about what they're doing, maybe not for fitness, but for health and wellness and all these different things, and then start turning yourself into somewhat of a content company that sells advertising. Because your marginal, your gross margin dollars on selling ads are going to be almost 100%, right? And you've got such a big mailing list and such a specific demographics. So that I think is your biggest upside. To turning yourself into a little bit more of a content company with advertising and maybe product sales or at least affiliate value where you make, you know, connect to Alyssa's Cookies on Amazon and get your 3-4%, whatever it is, 2%. And then I would do things for lower end where it's not about the Spartan element of it, but it's of the, you know, have fun introduction to fitness. Like the President's Physical Fitness stuff we were just talking about from way back when. The types of basic things that they used to do to get kids. I know you have Spartans kids, but doing things for introductory and maybe going to doctors and saying, look, we have this thing where you could walk it. Because, you know, just like with marathons and 5Ks and 3Ks, people walk those. But, you know, even if you're walking for an hour, it's not long, but, you know, it's boring, right? And you're still getting run by all the people that make you feel inadequate because these 80-year-old men are running by you when you're dying, right? But if you did something that was fun, relatively inexpensive, worked with doctors and counselors and weight loss programs to get people to come and use all that as a foundation to build your mailing list. Because your mailing list is the grand slam.
Believe it or not, the 600,000 is just who responded to the survey. We've got almost 10 million globally. So it's
that's your money.
Yeah.
That's your money right there.
Yeah.
That's your moneymaker right there. You sell products on there at all?
Not really. I mean, our own products. We've got like Spartan gear and
yeah. And you know, do you do decent okay selling the Spartan gear?
Yeah, we do pretty well.
Yeah. So if you're doing well just selling Spartan gear, right? Which is something once somebody's got one, they don't need another one. Sure. You know? But if you're selling, you know, if you add to that, you know, health tips, right, and you gear it towards, you know, and I would have that lean into a series of newsletters, right, so that you have, you know, the extreme fitness folks that are, you know, zero body fat and want to, you know, increase their to negative body fat, you know, versus the 30%, 40% body fat that are looking for basic tips. Those are two different mailing list, right? You can't put them all through your 10 million email list, right? Because you're going to bore somebody. But if you say, you know, we're expanding, you know, we love you guys, we want to come up with great information for you, what types of news and tips would you like? And would you like to see one general one, or would you like to see specifically for your level of fitness? And then start breaking that open. And then you start getting some experts who, let's say you find people like yourself, if you were outside of Spartan, that have podcasts and want to promote their podcast, and say, write this article and we'll let you, you know, promo your podcast if you also do a plug for the newsletter and do a plug for Spartan in your podcast. And so you make it, you know,
symbiotic.
Symbiotic, right. Hey, and Joe, thanks for having me on, and big thanks for Cressa at Shower Toga for putting us together. She's your biggest fan. Keeps me up to date on what you guys are doing. But if anybody hasn't checked out Shower Toga, please do. You know, when you come out to Spartan or you're out running races, where I was a rugby player, you know, when you're trying to change out of your rugby gear, particularly now, you know, and you just put a shower toga over top of you, take your clothes off, put your clean ones on, or wash yourself off even, and then put clean ones on. Shower toga is amazing.
I take cold showers every day with a shower toga. It takes the chill out.
Takes the chill out. There you go.
All right. I'll see you.
Appreciate you guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Spartan Up Podcast. Spartan Up is your partner in resilience for mind, body, and spirit. We're here 3 days every week. Tuesdays, you can find Joe DeSena, founder and CEO of Spartan, interviewing biohackers, business leaders, authors, and athletes. Thursdays and Saturdays, catch episodes from our DECA, Endurance, Trail, Combat, and La Ruta series. Do you know someone who needs a little nudge? Maybe they could use some motivation, tactics, to be stronger, healthier, happier, more successful. Tell them about our show. And if you're watching on YouTube, leave us a comment. We want to know who's watching and who's listening. Thanks. See you next time.